Anarchopreneur, episode number 34. Watch out for tulip mania. All right, here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, Free Market Squad? Welcome back to another exciting episode of Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show. We're broadcast every single Sunday night right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, LRN.FM. And of course, you can find more episodes of this here podcast over at NathanFrazierShow.com. That is the official home of this here podcast. I am your humble host with the Hero Complex, Nathan Frazier. You, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad. And this week, this episode's going to actually be a little bit topsy-turvy compared to most. So I'm going to go ahead and jump in to the Live Free FM segment of the show, the focus on freedom or lessons on liberty. And we're going to be talking about something called tulip mania. And this is a phrase that's been tossed around recently in association or in reference to something called Steam It, which actually I've got a buddy of mine, RJ Parker, is going to come on here in a little bit. And we're going to talk about his experience with Steam It. And because of the nature of Steam It, a lot of people are making references to it and calling it the modern day tulip mania. So I kind of wanted to take a moment before we jumped into that interview and talk about what tulip mania was. So kind of an overview. So tulip mania was an economic phenomenon that happened in Holland back in the 1600s. I want to say 1636, the winter of 1636 was when it first started. And I'm kind of going off of memory here, but somebody from the, I want to say the Ottoman Empire had introduced some kind of royalty in Holland to this flower, this new flower to them, which was the tulip. And it became very popular amongst the like the big wigs and the high rollers in Holland at the time. And it, because obviously they were the early adopters, and then the middle and lower class people started liking tulips as well. And so what happened was tulips, the price of tulips went through the roof because they weren't native to the area. They were kind of like a luxury item. And so people started wanting these tulips, and the demand was not able to keep up with the supply. And so what happened was people saw future investment in these in tulips, but not just like the tulips themselves, but the actual bulbs that you plant to get the tulips. So because they were very scarce at first, people were paying like outrageous prices to get tulips. So tulip dealers, people that were being able to import the tulip bulbs at the time, started like amassing a lot of tulips, and investors started paying for tulips in the bulb form and started paying like crazy amounts for them, knowing that they could sell them later, or thinking that they could sell them later for crazy prices. And it lasted only a couple of months, actually. It was kind of like a really quick bubble of like a boom and bust. But between, I think, November of 1936 to February, like early February, February 1st of 1636 until 1637. By February of 1637, like the price of a tulip bulb went to, I think they were trading in some cases at the same property or the same value of like a mansion. Like people were paying what they would pay for a mansion for a single tulip bulb. It was nuts. And so all of these tulip dealers, these futures investors, were buying up all of these massive amounts of tulip bulbs. And then in February, like 6 months after tulip mania kind of started spreading amongst the people, all of a sudden people just were like, okay, this is ridiculous. We're not going to pay this much for a freaking bulb, a flower bulb. And all of a sudden there was like an adjustment, a reckoning in the marketplace, and tulips plummeted in price, almost back to where they were at before the whole tulip mania started. And then what this left was a bunch of investors who had put a ton of money into procuring these tulip bulbs, thinking they were going to be able to make ass tons of money on the back end. And then they were just stuck with all of these tulip bulbs that they paid way too much for, and they couldn't even sell for, you know, a fraction of what they invested in. And it caused a huge economic collapse in the tulip market. And a lot of people got stuck holding the short end of the stick. And people refer to this type of phenomenon as a tulip mania. And we see this happen pretty frequently, actually. We see this happen just in my lifetime. I've seen it happen with Beanie Babies, where people would freak out, try and pay in hundreds of dollars to get Beanie Babies, and then 2 or 3 years later, can't even sell them on eBay for a dollar. And Beanie Babies aren't the only time that this has happened. Tickle Me Elmo and Furbies, I think is what they were called, are other examples of items where when they were hot, people would line up around the block trying to buy them and spend outrageous amounts of money to purchase these toys. And then a few years later, they're not even worth the material that they were made out of. So this type of thing happens pretty frequently, actually. And in marketing, actually, there's a way to create this phenomenon. It's where a store knows it's going to get a certain amount of Xbox Ones, or a certain amount, or Xbox knows that they're going to be able to produce a certain amount of Xbox Ones or PlayStation 4s, and they just advertise the heck out of it. Or toy companies do this as well. They know that they're only going to ship so many toys, or Walmart knows they're only going to get so many in time for the Christmas sales, but they just advertise the heck out of them, and they get all of the parents to promise that their little kids, yes, I'll get you that, little Johnny, whatever you want, I'm going to get you that Xbox One for Christmas. And then they go to the store, and the store only got 5 of them in stock, and so they weren't able to get the one that they wanted, and all of a sudden Xbox Ones are going for 6 times the price on eBay. And so you either got to break Johnny's heart, or you have to buy him something supplemental. So you buy him a PlayStation 3 instead of the PlayStation 4, or you buy him an Xbox 360 instead of the Xbox One that he really wanted. And then 5 months later, or maybe even 2 months later in February, all of a sudden Walmart is miraculously overstocked with Xboxes, and all of the parents who promised to buy the Xbox One for Christmas but weren't able to, so they bought the Xbox 360 instead. Now the Xbox One is there, and now they go and buy the Xbox One, because after all, they made a promise and they have to keep that promise. And now they've ended up buying an Xbox 360 and an Xbox One. And this is a little bit off topic, but it's related to what happens when tulip mania starts and people go crazy buying something and investing in something way beyond its value. And on that note, let's bring on RJ Parker. Welcome, RJ, to the show. RJ is you're one of the members of my mastermind group, and you're also somebody who I incredibly respect your opinion on all things marketing and sales. And you are also, I don't want to say an early adopter, but one of the beta users of this new internet sensation. I don't know if that's an accurate description, but half of my Facebook feed is people trying to shove their Steemit articles down my throat lately. And you're one of those people trying to non-consensually Steemit rape me. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. I don't mean to bombard you, but we'll chat it out and see, see what's really going on with all this.
And I say that completely in jest, but I'm not joking. Like 90% of my friends are trying to ride the wave of steam it millionaires. And I'll just say this for the listeners. I'm not drawing a line in the sand and being like, no steam it, like maybe Brian Sovereign or some other people might have been. But I'm also not like 100% on board with it either, like people like Jeff Berwick or some other people out there as well. I'm still kind of in the middle. I have a lot of concerns about it. I also have a lot of things that I think are really awesome about it, but I'm also, and this is 100% the truth, I'm very ignorant about it. And you are not quite as ignorant because you've actually been dabbing into this stuff. And like I said, I trust your opinion. So I wanted to have you on the show tonight to kind of maybe clear the air or maybe answer some questions or give your insights, because I don't want to cover the subject being completely ignorant to it. And I think that would be unfair to my listeners. It would be unfair to the platform. And so I wanted to have you on. Now, before we get into it, though, I did see a post that you said, a YouTube video or something, talking about why you want Steam It to succeed. And I want to just make it clear, I don't want Steam It to fail. I'm not like one of those guys that's like, I don't have like an emotional or a vested interest in it failing so I can be like, haha, I told you I was right and you stupid Steam It's guys were wrong. I really could care less either way. But we'll get into a lot of this stuff. But why is it that you want Steam It? What's the potential in Steam It that you see that maybe I'm overlooking?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to probably agree a little more than maybe either one of us expected from the onset, just because I'm not totally drinking the Kool-Aid either, if that makes sense. And I'm not sure that even people like Jeff Berwick are either. You know, he might be a little bit more opportunistic about it based on he has a track record of investing in things and being an entrepreneur and finding ways to make a quick dollar. And I don't really disparage him for that, although some do. Some definitely do. Some people on Steam It are quite upset with the perception he's created about what Steam It truly is. But just to kind of preface everything I'm going to say, I don't have this sort of blinders on sort of approach to Steam It, where I just assume it's the second coming of Bitcoin and it's going to be the greatest, and, you know, it's going to put Twitter and Facebook out of business in 2 weeks. But at the same time, there are definitely a lot of interesting aspects to it that I think, you know, definitely do excite me and give me hope for where the platform could go.
So for the listeners that maybe aren't completely aware of what Steam It is, I have a cursory knowledge of it. I've read a bunch of articles. I've looked at the platform. I don't really see it as the social experience that Twitter or Facebook are. So it doesn't really seem to me like it's in competition. It seems to me more kind of like a Reddit type platform. But for the people that don't know, what exactly is Steam It from a user's point of view?
Yeah, I think you're right, Nathan. I think that, you know, for the sake of a comparison, Reddit is probably the best, you know, kind of competition or you know, competing website that would compare to it in the social space. Basically, it's a threaded messaging or a threaded discussion forum of sorts where users can upvote or essentially downvote. On Steam It, there aren't actual downvotes like there are on Reddit, but there's a flag. And the kind of etiquette with Steam It is that the flag's supposed to be reserved for content that's either misrepresentative. So it's titled, you know, 10 ways to, you know, train your dog, and then it's all about ice cream or something like that. The flag isn't meant to be used as a pure downvote to where it's just something you don't like. So it's basically kind of like, if you don't like something, just move along. And if you do like it, go ahead and give it an upvote. The interesting thing with Steam It versus a platform like Reddit is not all upvotes are created equally. So the more you use the platform and the more currency you earn for creating good content and for accurately curating content, the platform rewards you with crypto tokens called Steam or Steam dollars or steam power. And I'll get into that later if you'd like in terms of the differences. But the steam power is sort of your long-term investment within Steemit. And the more steam power you have, the more your upvotes actually weigh into the platform deciding who to give currency to, who to reward. So newcomers coming onto the site just saying, I'm going to upvote everything or put comments everywhere, they're not likely to have as much success as someone who actually uses a bit of discretion and sort of curates carefully.
Now, the first question that I'm going to have, that most people are going to have, is we see these stories, like we see Jeff Berwick, and he talks about how he made $15,000 off of one post. And going through some of the majority, I would say probably like 99% of the articles that I've seen on Steemit have a $0 sign attached to them. But then every once in a while, I see one that has $12 or $30. And then sometimes I see ones that have $100 or $1,000 or whatever. Where is this money coming from that these Steem dollars? I've heard people say you can cash them out for Bitcoin. I don't know if you can straight up cash them out for USDs. But where is this money coming from? That's probably the first skeptical question that I would have.
Sure. So you're right that you can't directly cash out from Steem to US dollars, but that's pretty much the case with most cryptocurrencies. Obviously, Bitcoin and some of the bigger currencies on an exchange, you could go right from the currency itself, the cryptocurrency, to a US dollar balance and then cash out to, you know, a check, a wire transfer, or a bank account, something like that. But I actually reposted them. I have a curated post that I do every night, a daily roundup for Steemit. And last night we had, or I guess at the time of recording, so it'll be the 10th, the daily roundup that I did. There was a Steemit member who actually went through a step-by-step way on how to cash out Steem dollars into an online credit card that you can actually purchase anything with. So it is very much real currency. And with that method, you don't even have to cash it down into Bitcoin. You could actually spend it as Steemit. But to answer your question, where is the money coming from? Well, it's sort of exactly the same as every other cryptocurrency. So from a high level, it's the same. With Bitcoin, you know, you have to run a mining computer and you have to pay your, you know, extremely elevated energy bill. And with other currencies, there's something called the pre-mine, where they just make all the currency at once. So they make half of the currency all at once, and they distribute it by a pre-sale where you have to trade Bitcoin for a certain amount, and then it goes up in price, hopefully. And there's other methods. There's other cryptocurrency distribution methods. But essentially, any cryptocurrency is going to have, in the initial blueprint for it, is going to have a design as to how many credits are going to be possible to be created on that network over the course of the, you know, the lifespan of the blockchain. And with Steemit, the just so happens the way they chose to do it is a certain amount of it was pre-mined, and a certain amount of that is set aside to pay new users $7 worth of Steem power in order to incentivize people to sign up. So that's essentially where the money's coming from. To your question about Jeff Berwick and how come some people have $0 on their post and other people are making $15,000, that area is one of my concerns as well with the platform. However, I do think that based on the early stage that we're at, there's reason to believe that this is just an effect of things sort of leveling out and having not really leveled out just yet. And I would assume that over time, as more of the currency sort of spreads around and people have kind of different levels of Steem power in their account, it'll be a little bit more of an even spread, you know what I mean, of sorts, to where maybe the common amount will be 50 cents or $2 for a post or $10 for a great post. And, finding a $15,000 post probably be by and large a extremely like the year's best post or something like that, you know, a year from now or something like that.
So a couple things. First of all, when you write a post and people put how they upvote your post, and I'm assuming it's somebody like some central authority at Steemit that doles out these dollars to your account. Where exactly? Because just upvoting doesn't make the Steemit dollars magically appear or magically be mined. They've got to be held somewhere. Where are they being held when they're distributed to to your particular article?
Well, so they're being held in an admin account initially, but it isn't a central authority of sorts that actually says, oh, you know what? Nathan did a great post. Let's give him $10 of Steam, you know, for his post. Or he got 100 upvotes, so that's worth $10. There's no one sitting there with a calculator doing the math. This is all baked into the algorithm of the cryptocurrency itself. So you could read the white paper and, you know, maybe that, I don't know if you can link that or whatever, but the white paper explains in great detail, and a lot of it does go over my head, to be honest, but it explains clearly in no uncertain terms how it is that a vote affects payout based on the weight of the party doing the voting.
Okay. And so that's, I think, where me and you disagree is, so I was actually, people have been accusing me, because I'm not jumping on the Steam train yet. People have been accusing me of being like overly skeptical of it, or I've had the argument, well, Bitcoin was the same way and all you haters hated Bitcoin. And in my defense, I read the white papers of Bitcoin when they were at about $4, and I started taking payments in Bitcoin when Bitcoin was at about $12. So I made like a rather large return on my investment in Bitcoin because I understood Bitcoin and it made a lot of sense to me. And I was a very early adopter in Bitcoin. I've read through not the entire white paper for Steemit, but from what I've read through, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense. And I'll go back through it and try to reread it. But I heard that they were going to be re-updating it pretty soon. But I don't know. I guess there's a couple things in there that I can't draw from A to B and make me hesitant. The other thing is when we were talking about upvoting, we've got these things called whales in the Steemit community who, you were saying, not everybody's upvote has the same power. Can you kind of explain what whales are and what their influence on the success of an article brings to bear?
Yeah, so a whale is essentially, if we have any investors in the audience or people who are familiar with investing or even just trading other cryptocurrencies, a whale is essentially a market maker. You know, you have whales in the stock market, you have whales in a cryptocurrency exchange where they come in and set a huge buy order at a certain amount or a huge sell order at a certain amount. And essentially, because of the weight that they carry in the marketplace, they can lock a price in for a matter of days or weeks. And that's sometimes you'll go on Bitcoin, you know, Price Watch or something, and you'll see, wow, Bitcoin's been at, you know, 585 for 3 days straight. It barely moved. There's probably a whale unloading or purchasing a ton of Bitcoin at that price point, and they've set a massive buy or a massive sell order. So for a clear analogy, that's sort of what's happening, and that's not unusual at all with cryptocurrencies. So that's sort of what's happening with Steemit whales, how whales come about. Again, my hope is over time, there'll be more natural whales. A lot of the whales were born whales, let's just say, these days, whereas you can actually, by, you know, creating excellent content and engaging in the community and providing value, you can grow from the lower rank up to the higher rank. And I've made it up a few ranks myself. I don't know that the sky is the limit, but I hope that it sort of is. I hope it is more of a meritocracy than, you know, sort of a dictatorship.
And so I've been kind of skeptical and maybe critical of it for the first part of this discussion. I want to talk about some of the things that I do like about it, though. One of the first things that I really do like about it is the fact that it does have a reward based off of what the market demands type thing attached to it. But I have a little bit of skepticism because I think that it's heavily influenced by the quote unquote whales. But just the mere fact that you can, because I was going through some of your posts and I was going through some of my other friends' posts, and I was seeing that you could tell if there wasn't an undue influence, you could tell what your readers were wanting, and you could use that. You could look for common themes and use that to write new articles. And I think that's a really good idea. It's one of the things that I liked about Reddit, but the reason that I like it about this is there is obviously a monetary incentive attached to it. Going forward, is that something that you're excited about? Is that people can use this upvoting system to kind of dictate what the market wants from them?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, I think we're on the same page with that aspect of it. Whether it works or not, you know, that remains to be seen. And whether the whales influence, I mean, there's actually a few posts on Steemit that you could find. If you do a search for, you know, top 100 Steam accounts or top 500 Steam accounts, you can actually see the account age. And sometimes you can spot people you know on that list and you can see, oh, wow, you know, this person is just one of my friends. And I just saw them join 2 weeks ago and they're already number 85 on the list or whatever. So my hope is that the whales aren't going to be market makers and it's not going to be the same whales forever. My hope is that over time, you know, the wealth is sort of spread out. And, you know, the hardcore economics behind the white, you know, within the white paper and within the algorithm of Steam is going to have a lot to do with whether or not that's the case or not. And I don't think anyone can really accurately say that they know one way or another. But to your point, you know, what we're both excited about sort of is something that a lot of social networks have promised before, in a similar way to the Facebook like or the Twitter retweet or the Twitter follow or, you know, the Instagram like. By getting these little social nods from your peers or from the market of users, your account's gaining value. And there's people who literally monetized their Instagram account just by creating a following, and they started selling t-shirts for their brand or, you know, an ebook or something. And, you know, they're making good money just because they created a following on Instagram. So there's certainly a precedent for that sort of an outcome. I don't think Steam is mature enough to know whether it's going to happen there as well.
All right, we're going to take a break really quick. When we come back, RJ and I will finish our discussion talking about Steemit, and we'll close out the show. Don't go anywhere. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. We'll be right back.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. You like listening to podcasts, don't you? Have you ever thought about starting a podcast of your own? If you're a hardcore podcast fan, you probably have, and you've probably got something great to share with the world. I'm Nathan Fraser, and I've created a free online podcasting course for people just like you. Pre-Launch Secrets gives you the top 5 secrets you need to know in order to launch a successful podcast. You'll learn how to create the core concept of your podcast, how to build a solid audience, and how to consistently generate great content for that audience. These are the secrets the pros use when coming up with ideas for their podcasts. And after this course, you'll have them all at your disposal. The course is free. It's taught by me. Enroll today. Go to podcastblastoff.com/course. That's podcastblastoff.com/course. Podcast Blastoff, the future of podcasting.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
All right, and we're back. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. We're broadcast every Sunday night right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, NathanFraserShow.com, and, of course, over at LRN.FM. We are picked up and rebroadcast throughout the week. A huge thank you to all of the networks that pick up the show, and a huge thank you to you for tuning in and giving me an hour out of your week each and every week. And, well, you know what? Before we say anything else, let's just go ahead and jump right back into the conversation with RJ Parker talking about Steemit. So one of the things that concerns me is when I go through and I read or I do a search on the different topics that you can search through, and you can see which ones have gotten the biggest payouts and which ones have gotten the biggest amount of Steam power behind them. There's, to me, it's a disturbing trend that Steam and Steemit are the two biggest ones that have the most support from the whales, which to me kind of seems like they're unfairly putting their weight behind self-promotional articles rather than rather than distributing it amongst what a lot of the actual users are upvoting.
Yeah, I think that's a valid concern, but at the same time, and I know I'm going to come off sounding a little bit fanboyish here with this, because it sounds like I'm just blindly defending Steemit, no matter what you say, but I really believe in sort of my view on that kind of criticism, which is that, you know, when you're talking about a startup, especially one that's sort of, like you said, in beta, you have a lot of development left to do. You know, the product isn't finalized. So in this case, you have a group of developers who decided we're going to release this product in beta phase or even in alpha phase, and we're going to let the users, you know, find the bugs or make suggestions for improvement or critique us, what they like, what they don't like, what features they want to see happen. So a lot of the big upvoted content that you see within the Steam and the Steemit category are really kind of moving the conversation forward. And in a sense, if you want to get kind of pragmatic, and maybe you do, maybe you don't, but in a sense, those high level discussions about Steemit as a platform affect every user, even if your topic is, you know, Chinese architecture or hot dog cooking. At the end of the day, if Steemit's not going to be around a year from now, all of our efforts will have gone, you know, to waste, and all the currency that we've accumulated will become worthless. So it's really to everyone's best interest that, you know, the real discussions on the viability of the platform and improvements that could be made is, you know, is kind of front and center.
Okay. That sounds fair. What about the, what are your feelings on, I keep hearing people say that Steemit can't be censored, or that it's, I often hear people talk about how Facebook will censor you. I've been a quote unquote victim of Facebook censoring. I've had my ad count suspended and halted. I've had particular posts and pages that I am associated with flagged and had those pages shut down. We also see things like Twitter starting to shut down the neo-right activists that use Twitter to promote themselves. And people are saying that this particular new platform is kind of like a safeguard or a defense against censoring. And that seems to be like attracting a particular type of demographic of Steam users, where I see the majority of content coming from activists or anarchists or people that maybe feel like they can't have their content shared so freely on Facebook or Twitter. I've always been a proponent of own your own platform and just use other people's platforms to get people back to yours. But what are your thoughts on the whole censorship? Is it really as anti-censorship as people are promoting it to be? And being so, is Steemit setting itself up to be, I guess, typecast or only attractive to a certain type of demographic that's really not, in my opinion, if they want widespread adoption, I don't know if the only type of people that I see going towards it right now are kind of fringe people. So I guess that's two questions in one. Is it really the bastion of free speech that we keep hearing it about it as? And if so, how is that going to affect its widespread adoption?
So to kind of put it simply, to answer your question as, you know, as straightforwardly as I can, I think it is more or less worthy of its reputation as being more or less censor proof. Now, like I said, you can flag posts, and there's nothing preventing me and a bunch of my buddies getting together and flagging all of Nathan's posts because we just don't like you. And that's a real concern. And I've actually seen some discussion on Steemit recently about how to mitigate that. And there's development work being done, to my knowledge, that is going to kind of help make the algorithm a little more intelligent in terms of looking for patterns and sort of reducing the effect of a flag. And I don't know that this stuff is in place yet, but sort of looking for flags that look abusive and not organic and sort of, you know, just devaluing the flag. The other thing I would say is, in terms of the other sites you mentioned, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, you know, these sites are, and Google too, and YouTube, they're more or less being captured by the left, if they're not already so. You know, the conservative or, you know, anti-government sort of posts are getting buried in news feeds. You have pages like Liberty Memes on Facebook getting, you know, taken offline or banned and then brought back or whatever the case may be. And, you know, Twitter with the Milo Yiannopoulos thing, Reddit, there was a whole scam over there with Gamergate. So there's a lot of evidence of kind of all these content sites and social media sites being kind of censored by the left and kind of creating an echo chamber for their agenda. He had the DNC leak hashtag censored and links to any DNC leak information censored on Facebook and kind of went ghost. So yeah, Steemit kind of is on the, you know, ultra right, if you want to talk about it, even though voluntarists or anarchists would say we're not left or right, but you know, it is kind of a safe haven for ultra conservative or anarchist or voluntarist content. And in a sense, it's a shame that there isn't a real moderate neutral playing ground where every voice is accepted and interested to be, you know, to be there and all that. But if you're talking about a utopian social platform as a goal, you know, it's like when you're building a bridge, you can't start from the middle of the bridge. You have to start from both sides that you're trying to, you know, traverse. So I'm totally with you that I think, you know, Steemit has that kind of anarchist bias now, and it might never gain mass adoption because of that. If it can't, you know, do a good job at, you know, categorizing the content in such a way that it's not, you go to the homepage, it's not just all anarchists on the top of Steemit, but that, I guess that remains to be seen.
See, and that's one of the things is, in my opinion, for this to catch on and to sustain its value, because I see it as, like I said, I'm on the fence. I can see this easily, I can see the bubble bursting, and I could see the company going under, and I can see everybody's effort being put into it being a waste of time. I can also see if it can get a little bit of adoption outside, because right now it seems like it's an anarchist echo chamber. And if it can breach or branch out past that, I can see it being something that people will continue to invest in. I can see it being something that people will continue to invest their time in. But I don't know what kind of efforts are going towards that. And I don't know. I mean, when you run a platform, you have to kind of take these things into consideration. You have to make decisions about what kind of, what type of demographic you want to serve, what type of things you're going to promote, and what kind of things you're going to kind of quash. I mean, as much as I'm anti-censorship, I understand a lot of the decisions that, like, Facebook makes when certain things of mine get told that I'm not allowed to advertise or get flagged as spam. I initially get hurt, but then I'm like, okay, I understand what Facebook wants their experience to be for their users. So these are things that, as a platform builder, you have to take into consideration. So I'm curious to see how it goes. I'm a little bit concerned that the demographic that I see rushing to it is it's not a profitable, sustainable demographic. And that's just my main concern on that. But the one thing that I did want to kind of close this talk down with and get your point of view on is the whole something that, as marketers, we have to deal with this all the time, which is the bright, shiny object syndrome, where something catches our attention. And you know, last week it was Snapchat. 2 weeks before that, it was Instagram. And 3 weeks before that, it was Twitter. And the whole idea of people constantly throwing their attention towards other people's platform instead of building their own platform. And that's one thing that I'm concerned about is, and me and you talked about this, if I'm going to be spending time building that platform and it doesn't pan out, or it can only reach a very small demographic that I'm not trying to reach, what happens if I had instead put that energy into building my own platform at my own website? So for content creators out there that have to deal with that decision, I've stated my concern. What's your retort to that?
You know, nothing's black and white. I think that from a marketing standpoint, for pure brand development, depending on the industry you're in or the niche that you're in, there's definitely a case to be made for what you said, where you know, you're going to regret not having a website if you don't start out and, you know, start getting some link juice and some SEO and some, you know, some, you know, the older your domain is on the web, the more SEO validity it has in the eyes of Google and things like that. But at the same time, you know, certain brands, like if you told me I have a t-shirt company and I'm looking to sell t-shirts online, I would tell you, start posting stuff on Instagram. And find out who the influence makers are, and find out where your audience and your customer is on Instagram, and because it's a visual product and it's a visual platform, so it's a perfect match. You don't have to worry about hosting, you don't have to worry about server costs, you don't have to worry about hiring a developer. Just start uploading things, start following people, start engaging, and let it be known that these t-shirts are for sale. And then you don't even need to have a link to a Big Cartel. I mean, Big Cartel and Shopify and those things, you could get started for pennies on the dollar with a free account. But even if you didn't have that, you could just say private message me. And I've actually seen a lot of businesses working like that on Instagram, where it's private, you know, art sales, especially. I see people selling $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, you know, art paintings on Instagram through private message and PayPal link. So, I mean, we are sort of in this turbulent time where the market, forgetting about cryptocurrency, just a regular e-commerce market, is so up in the air. And one week, oh, everybody has to be on Snapchat, and then Snapchat changes their platform, or Instagram comes out with something that competes with Snapchat, and it's like, oh, do I still have to be on Snapchat? Like, that's really a positive thing for marketers in a sense, because it gives us the opportunity to know more and to stay ahead of the curve and to provide value to our clients and as entrepreneurs to our customers, because we know how to bring that value to them and how to present it in the format that they're looking to receive it in. But at the same point in time, I know exactly what you're saying, to where do we have time as entrepreneurs or as marketers to waste, let's just say hypothetically waste, on Steam it if it's just going to blow up in our face 6 months from now?
Yeah, it's always, I guess, a struggle. I struggle with it. I'm sure you struggle with it. Probably anybody out there that is a business owner or a content creator probably struggles with it. One last thing that I want to ask you, and then I'll allow you to let people know where they can find you on Steam it. But what would you say to the people that are watching posts like Jeff Berwick blow up and making thousands of dollars, and are saying, I want to get paid all of that money for writing 4 paragraphs. Would you have a word of caution, or would you say just jump in? What would your thoughts be to somebody that sees this as an opportunity to make a whole bunch of money without having to do a lot of work?
That type of response to Steam it is understandable, but at the same point in time, it's obviously, as you're, you know, suggesting, it's a bad thought to have. I remember I did one of the first articles I did on Steam. It was a response to the craze around Jeff Berwick, and it was something titled like, "If you think that, or if you weren't previously a writer and you think you're going to make a lot of money on Steam, you're probably wrong." I probably worded it a little better, but to make an analogy, that sort of mentality of, "Oh well, Jeff Berwick made $15,000 on Steam, so I better join and I'm going to be rich." That's like watching a Nike commercial and seeing Kobe Bryant slam dunk and go, oh, I better get Nikes because then I'll be able to slam dunk. I get that that's what they're trying to make you think. And that's what Steam it's probably happy. You know, the admins and the developers. Oh, great. Look, Jeff Berwick brought in, you know, 1,000 people. But that's just good business. I mean, if I was starting a clothing brand or you name it, an app, I'd love to get a spokesperson, right? I'd go out and find someone, you know, like Gary Vaynerchuk, and say, hey, Gary, can you talk about, you know, my app on your show? I'll give you, 5% equity or whatever. It's really, it's a spokesperson deal without being explicitly, said.
All right. Where can people, since we've been talking about it all this whole time, where can people find you if they want to go find you on Steam it?
Yeah, so I made an account there at Write Words, WRITE, WORDS, Write Words. I would have made it at Roads to Liberty, which is my kind of liberty platform, but I made my account like 2 months ago when I first heard about it, and I forgot about it. And just as an interesting little side note, when you leave your currency in Steam Power on the platform, which is where it starts out, the $7 that you get, it grows slowly over time in proportion to where you are in the growth curve of the network. More or less. So because I got in so early with my $7, when I finally came back a month and a half later to post, it was at like $40. Hmm. That's unusual because that was earlier in the growth curve. But just going to show, I have an account value of almost $100 now, and it's only maybe a third of that from actual articles. Actually, for full disclosure, I did take about $28 or so with the Bitcoin and throw it into Steam as well. So part of that's my own little investment as well.
Okay, sweet. Well, thank you, RJ, for joining us. I really do appreciate it. For the listeners at home, you've heard both sides of, well, we've heard two sides of the argument tonight, and I would put it on you to do a little bit more investigation. I, again, am not saying I hope that it fails or that it, I actually hope that it succeeds, and I hope to see people like you, RJ, be able to succeed with it. So that's where my stake is planted. I actually do hope that it succeeds. I just do have some concerns as well. So thank you for joining me tonight, and we will talk to you later.
Thanks, Nathan. I appreciate it.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview with RJ about Steemit, and I'm just going to come out and say this. After I got done recording this interview with RJ, I actually, off the air, we had a little bit of banter going on, and he convinced me that I needed to try to set up an account and try it. So I did. I set up my account. You can find me at Tulip Mania. That's my Steemit username is Tulip Mania. Little inside joke there. And he convinced me to try and make a couple of posts. He said, look, you're a copywriter. You're probably going to do better than most people will with Steemit. So you might as well try it and see what kind of results you get. And he was right. I posted an about me article, just kind of like an introduce yourself or introduce myself article. And within 12 hours, I got paid $279 off of it, which is, it's not bad. It's a little bit less than what I usually charge people to write, but just for grabbing the keyboard and hacking out an hour of an about me post. I can't complain. $300 for an hour's worth of work. That's not bad. But that's not indicative of what most people will make on Steemit. And having gone through Steemit and looking at what makes an article successful and what doesn't make an article successful, there's two things that played into my favor. So number one, obviously I'm a copywriter. I know how to write a headline that grabs people's attention and pulls them in. I know how to use subheads to keep people reading. I know how to set up an about me page. I've probably written close to 60, maybe 70 different about me pages for different companies and for different content creators. So I know how to do that stuff. I know how to write a compelling about me article that keeps people reading. Most people don't know how to do that. The other thing is I know how to format an article that makes it really easy for your eyes to move across. I know how to use subheaders to pull you back into the copy. Most people don't know how to do that. And I also have a platform, pre-existing platform. A lot of people know who I am. I didn't spam Facebook. I didn't post my article on 15 different groups. I posted it one time in the Free Market Squad group, and I posted it one time on my own page. And I'm going to venture to say that probably none of the traffic that went to my article actually came from Facebook. But I have two advantages that most people don't have. I understand how to write copy, and I have a platform. So when people on Steemit saw that I was on there, they went and read the article. And I have a lot of friends that are already on Steemit. So I don't know. I don't want to say you can start a Steemit account and spend an hour typing and get $300 from it. You can be just like me, because I think that would be a little bit dishonest. So in the future, actually, this might be it. Let me know if you think this is a good idea. Maybe I'll do an episode on headlines, on how to get people to read your article based off of your headline, how to put a good headline together. Maybe I'll do an article on how to use sub or a podcast on how to use subheads. Maybe I'll do a podcast on how to put an about me page together or introduce myself post together. Because these are things that I think a lot of people are lacking. A lot of activists think they look at Steemit and they say, oh, I can get paid money like Jeff Berwick did. I can get thousands of dollars just for writing about anarchism. No, you can't. I say this over and over and over again to the point where it's literally getting sick of saying this. It's not in the marketplace of ideas. It's not about who's got the best idea. It's about who's the best salesman. And so many of you fucking activists out there refuse to learn how to be better salesmen for your ideas. And until you get over the fact or the idea that being a salesman is sleazy, until you get over the idea that you're above being a salesman, you're never going to find success. And Steemit is not going to make you rich off of your activism. Okay, that's enough of my rant. I just wanted to say, even though I was skeptical and even though I got paid a pretty decent amount of money for an hour's worth of work, I'm still skeptical. I'm still on the fence about it. And I still think that that there's more to it than just writing articles and cashing out. As I go forward, I'll probably write some more articles. I'll let you know what my experience with it is. And you let me know, is this something that you would like to learn more about? How to effectively write articles, how to construct headlines that pull people in, how to construct subheads that pull people back in. Is this something that you're interested in? I hope it's something that you're interested in. Most of you, I hope it's something you're interested in, because most of you have great ideas. Most of you have great projects. Most of you have great activism that could change the world. But until you start learning how to be a better salesman or saleswoman, those ideas, those activisms, if that's a word, those things are going to fall flat. And I see a lot of activism on Steemit falling flat. All right, before we're out of here, a couple of house cleaning notes to cover real quick. I am going to be speaking at a Liberty on the Rocks event this Monday, the 22nd of August, 2016, Liberty on the Rocks, Westminster, Colorado. I believe it's going to be on 120th in Westminster at the CB and Potts, just west of I-25. I think it starts at 7 o'clock, and there'll be question and answer. I'm going to be talking about what I love to talk about, employing marketing tactics into your activism to make your activism that much more effective. I just got done doing a rant on this. It's something I'm passionate about, though. I think it's something that most people in the political atmosphere need to have a better understanding of. It's one of the things that's killing the Liberty movement is people ignorant to how to market their message better. So I'm going to be talking about that at a Liberty on the Rocks event, August 22nd, 2016, Westminster, Liberty on the Rocks. Check that out if you're in the area. Also, I want to give a huge shout out to Daryl Becker, who joined me this last Monday on a live webinar. We did a webinar on how to create a hero's journey autoresponder. We had a bunch of people from the Free Market Squad show up for that. It was awesome. I had a lot of fun. Daryl had a lot of fun. And all of the people that joined us in the webinar said that they learned a lot. We had a question and answer segment at the end of that. And so I'm going to take some of those questions and incorporate them into the lesson. And if you missed this last webinar, don't worry. In the future, I'm going to be redoing the webinar. I'm not sure when, but I'm going to take some of the stuff that I learned from this last one, incorporate it into the next one, and the next one's going to be even better, if that's even possible. So huge thank you to Daryl, and a huge shout out to everybody that showed up for that. And then lastly, before I'm out of here, I wanted to let you know, we're going to be doing live Facebook Live videos on Thursday nights in the Free Market Squad group. It's going to be kind of like Ask Me Anything videos. So if you've got a question for me and you want a direct link to me, those Ask Me Anything videos will probably be the best way to do it. And the way that you can get in on that is by joining the Facebook Free Market Squad group. You can get information on how to do that over at freemarketsquad.com. Until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Hashtag BYOBoss. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life, and membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.